Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King.
And I'm Jason Henricks. Every week since 2013, we explore the personalities, startups, innovators, and industry players driving disruption in financial services.
From incumbents to unicorns, and from cutting-edge technology to the people using it to help create a more innovative, inclusive, and healthy financial future. I'm JP Nichols, and this is Breaking Banks.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King, and you are, of course, on the number one fintech podcast globally. We are happy to have you back. This week, we have our returning friends from Plaid. We're going to talk about what's happening with essentially the world of payments, particularly the momentum being gained by Pay by Bank, not just FedNow in the United States, but what's happening in India with UPI, with PixPay in Brazil. We want to get into all of that and how that sort of modality shift is really changing the way we think about real-time payments, the architecture such as wallet architecture that's expanding and so forth. So let's get into it. Welcoming to the show the Chief Operating Officer of Plaid, Eric Sagar. Eric, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, of course, Plaid is the technology company powering the fintech ecosystem. At Plaid, Eric leads the company's business strategy and operations, as well as the go-to-market teams. Prior to Plaid, Eric served as chief risk officer at Bluevine. He led teams across there, ensuring end-to-end client experience. Before that, he held multiple positions at Square, including head of sales. Also led Square's efforts to optimize the end-to-end customer lifecycle as head of growth and retention. So he knows network effect and how this works in these payments arenas. And also did a stint in San Francisco, London, and Joburg for Bain. So Eric, welcome to the show. Trevor Neese is a payments and risk professional with 20 years of e-commerce experience. He's coming to us as the senior VP, global head of digital at Adyen. Trevor, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Yeah, so you've got a ton of experience, apart from global strategy and for digital merchants, which is driving the product roadmap and go-to-market strategy. You worked on Microsoft's global payment strategy. So great reference points. We're grateful for both of you coming on the show today. First of all, Trevor, what's happening with you guys in Europe right now? Can you give us just a bit of a status of the business and how things are going? Just, well, globally, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think first off, you know, we've seen quite a change in merchant behaviors coming out of the pandemic. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of focus on performance, approval rates, a lot of focus on local payment methods and how we think about that. But now costs have become really a big focus area for our merchants and prospects, and how to reduce that total cost of payments is really become top of mind for merchants globally. And no doubt we've seen probably more pressure in the US than perhaps some other countries, but it definitely is a worldwide phenomenon. But what we're seeing, though, is the world it's not getting simpler. It's actually getting much more complex in the payment space. And the US is probably the best example of that, where, you know, used to be easy back in the day. It was just process cards, and you had everything you needed, and
just send a big truck with a truckload of money to different ATMs around the place.
That was kind of it, right? And things have changed quite a bit, and you know, we're fortunate at Adyen. I think we were built to deal with complexities and make that really simple for our merchants, and so we're seeing a lot of opportunity for us to continue to add new innovation and new customer experiences for existing customers, but also enable some new customers and new scenarios out there in the industry as well.
Absolutely. Eric, how's things going over at Plaid?
It's going well as well. We've obviously had a number of years, as you said, kind of building out the kind of the overall infrastructure across the broader fintech ecosystem, really just allowing consumers to, you know, both more safely, but also more effectively connect their accounts. And that's not just bank accounts, but that's liability accounts, investment accounts. And that has powered a whole host of use cases. You know, payments is one of them, but it also powers, you know, identity-based use cases. It powers personal financial management use cases. It powers lending use cases. And so it's really been the foundation for, I think, a lot of innovation in the space that, you know, drives not just financial inclusion, but that gives any consumer more options, better prices. And that applies to obviously businesses, customers as well, in the way that Trevor just mentioned.
So, of course, Plaid has been best known in the US as the closest thing we have to open banking in the US through the aggregation layer and so forth. But, of course, for Aiden's business in Europe, you guys have been directly involved in payments architecture as well, right, Trevor?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And quite deep, actually. And, you know, and just to be, you know, clear too, is we have a very large business, you know, in the US as well. We have,
right,
you know, really about a quarter of our employees are there. It's the fastest growing market for us. So we are very, very focused in the US. But when we think about architecture, one of the things that I think we've been able to really invest a lot of really great resources in is the fact that we have banking licenses in the US, in the UK, and in Europe. And so our ability to connect directly with the central banks and provide these open banking capabilities at just a phenomenal rate and with innovation has been really, really helpful. And then hence, you know, partnering with Plaid to help us create even a new scenario here in the space, especially in the US and beyond, as just a great opportunity for us and for the industry, I think.
Now, you know, we've been watching this space. Obviously, FedNow has released in the US. It is starting to gain some momentum. But the real action appears to be happening offshore. We have in Brazil with PixPay, Brazil is effectively now at about 100% of the adult population. About 75% of the total population in Brazil is using PixPay. It's the fastest growing payments network in the world today. We have the UPI rails out of India, the Unified Payments Interface, I think it stands for UPI. We are looking at, by 2027, 80% of retail commerce going over the UPI rails. And this is driving adoption of wallet technology as well. So in 2025, about 55% of all retail commerce transactions will go through wallet architectures. And if we're starting to talk about autonomous payments in the future, AI-based payments, it makes sense that bank pay is going to be a very big part of that sort of agency-based payments layer. But certainly the trend, looking at Brazil, looking at India, you know, two of obviously the largest emerging markets, part of the BRIC alliance. We have, you know, UnionPay 2.0 in China, enabling not only real-time payments from bank to bank, but also the fintech platforms like WeChat Pay and Alipay co-opted into that. So it seems like just like everywhere in what we would have traditionally called the developing world now is really shifting to these real-time payments very rapidly. But, you know, we have a lot of legacy payments behavior in places like the US and the UK. And yes, we've got a lot more contactless payments happening and so forth. And obviously the bank pay is heating up. But what do you think we can learn from these other markets? Because we would have considered in the past the European markets, the US markets, where you guys are both operating, we would have considered them the most sophisticated markets for things like payments architecture. But right now, with the massive growth we're seeing in bank pay, that it tends to be offshore. So, Trevor, what can we take away from that? Is that sort of telescoping the future of the US and European markets?
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. As you mentioned, the developing countries are actually the leaders in the payment space.
Yeah.
If you think about APAC in general, I mean, wallets have been around for years in these particular markets, right? You know, the Alipays, the WeChat Pays, especially in China. But then you get into Southeast Asia, and everything is wallets at the end of the day. And then, as you mentioned, you know, India and Brazil specifically, yeah, we have never seen payment types grow this fast in our lives. And to be fair, you know, they're solving for something slightly different than the US to some degree, right? I mean, India is all about how to get cash out of the ecosystem. And so UPI was really the answer that the RBI and regulation bodies came up with to help drive that. But they're also spending a lot of time and effort with regulation to help enforce it and make sure that it's adopted, you know, across the entire country. And it certainly is for merchants to play in that space and process locally in India. There's a lot of UPI requirements that are mandated. Brazil is also fascinating, no doubt, still trying to get cash out of the ecosystem, but you know, they're solving for a couple other things too, which is you know, providing a much cheaper payment type that exists in the country. But the central bank has been super involved and engaged on ensuring that every bank app has Pix available. It's got the same logo and the same position. It's just right in front of the face of every consumer, and customers are adopting it at light speed in essence. They got work to do still to get recurring to work on that, to get advancements to work, but that's all coming, it looks like, you know, this year. So that'll be fascinating to watch. But then if you bring that back to the US, yeah, we're slow to adopt these things. You know, bank methods have certainly been around in Europe for many, many years, whether it's more of a wallet or just with SEPA in general, things of that nature.
Right. Oh, gyro, yeah.
But we're picking up speed, I would say, right? I mean, and no doubt the pandemic was kind of a good thing, frankly, for us, right? I mean, now tap to pay is prevalent. Like, I'm almost shocked now when I go to a point of sale and I can't whip out my phone and just tap it, right? And so we've seen some good progress there. Wallets now, it's not just PayPal, which was really the sole wallet for so many years online. They, of course, never were able to really bust into the point of sale. But now you got Cash App, the Google Pays, the Apple Pays, you know, Venmo. Only Apple Pay and Google Pay have really tapped into that point of sale too. I think what's going to be fun to watch here is, you know, how do we at some point also get bank pay methods not only online but even point of sale? Perhaps we can talk about that later here, but that's going to be a fun one to see what happens.
Eric, from an operational perspective, obviously there's a lot of technology integration elements here. In markets like Brazil and India, implementing real-time payments, just because labor costs are significantly lower, tends to be a lot cheaper. But we see a lot of sticker shock for FedNow in the United States. Do you expect that that's going to get more accessible for banks and merchants over time? Is that part of the reason that's a little slower here?
Yeah, I definitely think it will become more accessible over time. I mean, big picture, I see all of this as kind of an inevitable kind of digital evolution of how people pay. You start with cash, you go to check, you go to debit cards, and over time you go to fully digital kind of debit, which is what we call pay by bank. And so there's a lot of pay by bank use cases that exist in the US today. If you were funding a new brokerage account or a new bank account, a lot of the subscription payments, if you were trying to buy a car, for example, many of those are happening via bank payments today already in the US. And so we power actually a lot of those use cases. And I think one of the trends that we've seen there, and one of the reasons we're so excited to work more closely with Adyen, is, you know, we've got a lot of merchants that came to us that said, hey, we really now want to integrate this pay by bank capability into our broader payment stack, right? And we'll want to optimize what a consumer ultimately sees, because there's so many benefits. From a consumer's perspective, paying with a bank account, you can help reduce your costs. It's also a way to more maturity, I think, manage your finances. And you see that reflected again in the US with like a lot of the younger demographic actually really prefer to pay with their bank account. Like some of the stuff I've seen already, it's like, you know, 60-70% of young people in the US, they actually want to pay with a bank account because they've seen all the horror stories of what happens, right? If you're on the credit path too much.
They're just not excited about things like cashback and airline miles. They're much more concerned about, they don't want to take on credit load. They saw their parents having excess credit, and then, you know, what happened during the financial crisis and what happened during the pandemic. And there definitely seems to be sort of a generational shift to more of the, you know, value store sort of debit account rather than taking credit, right? Would you agree, Eric?
Yeah, exactly. And I think those trends will continue, right? I mean, I think that's here to stay. And so as that generation kind of matures and as others follow behind, I think you're going to see more and more demand for those types of solutions as well. And in the US and other markets that have traditionally, right, had like a really strong culture of like rewards, credit cards, and other things, that will continue to evolve.
Yeah. Now, Trevor, when we sort of look at the sort of technical aspects of this and sort of an infrastructure play, how much of this depends on your agility and your tech stack to be able to incorporate bank pay stuff as a bank and as a fintech?
Yeah, and I think it kind of depends on which lens you're taking here, but certainly, you know, from an adding perspective, it's just another local payment method, frankly, right? Like we built our tech stack to be super agile, super flexible to just add anything.
Agnostic.
Yeah, really, exactly. Yeah, whether it's convenience store payment method in Japan, whether it's a wallet in China, or whether it's a bank payment method, it's quite simple. And certainly, our intent, our goal, is to make this just absolutely simple and easy for any merchant to want to consume. Right. Again, going back to a lot of complexities, that's I think one of the real opportunities we have here between us and Plaid, the solution that we're building here, is how to make sure that we just make it simple. We make it easy for merchants to plug into. And take advantage of a payment type that will add to their selection of payment types for their customers who want to use it at the end of the day. So there's some complexities certainly behind the scenes, but I think we're able to really do a nice job to kind of mask that a bit and take care of that for our merchants.
You're talking about these different countries and so forth. So just to give people a bit more of a picture for Adyen's sort of merchant profile, how many sort of merchants and what sort of diversity of merchant business do you guys have?
Yeah, and so we focus entirely on large enterprise merchants, and what that really means is, you know, those that are well north of 100 million, 500 million, well in the billions of revenue a year. We really focus on kind of a white glove service with respect to that. You know, we've never made an acquisition, so we have a single integration, a single platform, single reporting, again, just to make that easy. Subscription merchants are a big part of what we do, online retail, but we also have point of sale. And we also have platforms and marketplaces that we support. And so there's definitely a wide gamut, but it's very much a very global company. Yeah, we started out, in Europe and greatly expanded into LATAM, North America, and Asia Pacific. You know, we have certainly some of the most local acquiring licenses than anybody out there as well, to provide that really nice local experience.
Eric, you mentioned some of the use cases that are already getting traction in terms of pay by bank. What are some of those where consumers are already comfortable with this this modality?
The biggest ones are obviously account funding, right? So let's say you want to set up a new account, you want to transfer funds into it. That's very active. Bill pay is another one. That's very mature. You think about how you might pay your cell phone bill or your electric bill or anything like that. Subscription payments is another area that's very beneficial. And it ensures that from a consumer's perspective, like that service is never interrupted. It's very attractive from a merchant perspective, not just because of the potential cost benefits. But again, if I switch my credit card, or if I switch my debit card, if the number changes, any of those things don't apply once it's kind of securely linked to the account. And then, large ticket purchases. So, as I mentioned earlier, we have Tesla, Rivian, John Deere are all customers of ours already who use Pay by Bank for really large dollar amounts. So where the average selling price is very high, the cost piece of this becomes a huge portion of it. And oftentimes can lead to merchants being willing to kind of provide meaningful incentives to the customers as well to kind of make that switch. But again, in the context of, as Trevor said, you want to meet customers where they are, and you want to make sure that you have all payments methods available. So this is one more payment method. I think it's a really powerful one. It's one that is only going to get better and better and better. But I think you will see for many other use cases, this kind of becomes one of the suite of things as opposed to the only thing.
Trevor, what are some of the core benefits for merchants in using bank pay versus, say, other methods we see?
And Eric commented certainly on one of the most important ones, which no doubt is costs. I mean, especially in the U.S., one of the most costly places in the world to process cards, it provides a nice cost alternative. The second thing is churn and subscription churn or customer churn. And what I mean by that is, the average American holds on to their bank account for about 17 years. I looked at my account. It turns out it's about 17 years since I've had it. But the average card is only around for 2 or 3 years, right? So you can naturally, intuitively see that that chance for success on that bank account that's been there forever versus a card is going to be certainly much greater. And then the third thing is you can now reach a population that you may not have been able to reach in the past. I mean, there's even today, so there's a population that has maybe a bank account, but doesn't have a debit card, you know, that's brand new, Visa or MasterCard. And so now you have access to that population to increase your sphere of opportunities to sell your products. And so those are really the three big reasons. But, you know, as Eric also mentioned, like the idea is give choice, give payment methods that your customers want. And this is another opportunity, another option for those customers. And again, the younger generation is going to be probably much more susceptible to wanting to use this today and in the future as well. That's a great place to target here.
All right. Well, let's talk about that, because there does tend to be, you know, a generational shift. Like I remember my grandma used to, you know, give me, slip the dollar bills in with the cards and stuff, you know, when I was younger. Of course, you know, checks were common back in those days, but there is a big generational shift here. But I still have people that I meet, for example, in the US that are like, well, I'm never going to give up my cash back, or I'm never going to give up my airline miles and so forth. But that seems a little bit anachronistic now, you know, like seems a little bit sort of outdated. You know, when we start thinking about the payments activities of millennials, Gen Zs, alphas, you know, as that's changing. Eric, what sort of changes are happening behaviorally from a payments perspective, from generational, you know, segment?
Well, I think the first thing actually to consider is like, even in the US, you know, 40-45% of people do not have access to a reward card. So it feels that way sometimes, as it feels like almost everybody has one, but in fact, that actually isn't true. There's a huge part of the population that doesn't have access to it. For whom, you know, suddenly getting an incentive on a pay by bank transaction actually is way more attractive than the no rewards card they would otherwise have. Beyond that, you know, I think it's kind of akin to what we already touched on, but I think the younger generation has seen, right? Like in some cases, their parents, you know, people around them grow up with debt and feel the burden of that. And so I think many young people now are more cautious, not all, right? But many are more cautious about how they live their financial lives. And so you see that in terms of them wanting to use their data to build, you know, to use leverage personal financial management tools and other things from a much earlier age. But that also then applies to payments. And it's just fundamentally true that, you know, if I'm the kind of consumer that pays with my bank account, I'm a much lower credit risk. I'm much more financially mature than the kinds of folks that are using kind of mainly credit vehicles to do that. And so that's a huge positive. And then finally, it's about making this easy, right? There's ultimately two things that matter in terms of pay by bank. The first is the percentage of people that actually choose it as an option. So if I show you five different payment types, what percentage of people actually choose pay my bank versus choosing a credit card or choosing something else? And then the second is for those people that choose it, like at what rate can they convert, right? And that's important for both the merchant and the consumer, because you don't want to click on something only then to not be able to go through it. And I think that's an area where, again, like in working with Adyen, like we've really innovated quite a bit. And so what we've seen, for example, is we just had a use case that we implemented where, you know, we offered a 1% incentive, and that drove the adoption from about 16-17% to 60%. So suddenly in that menu, you have 60% of people saying, no, I actually want to go pay by bank. And then the second thing we've seen is, with how we've architected Plaid and Plaid Link specifically, and all the experience that we have on many of the use cases like account funding and bill pay that I spoke about earlier, is we've really managed to make the conversion much better. And so we've had a customer just in the travel space where they were seeing conversion of around, you know, 20%, so quite low, right? You have 15% of people choosing it, but then only 2 out of 10 people actually go through with the transaction. And we were able to get that above 70% simply by implementing our solution. And so that's fantastic. Suddenly you see consumer, and that's the foundation. So it's consumers may want it, but if you don't make it easy and secure for them, you're not going to see the actual adoption, and you're not going to see the conversion that you need to really scale it. And we're right at that inflection point where increasingly we have the capabilities to deliver that for consumers and merchants alike.
Trevor, in your experience, just before we go to break, is there any significant benefit on the fraud side with pay by bank versus other payments methods?
Yeah, no, we really believe there is. And this is where Plaid really brings a ton of value to this partnership that we have here. The ability to really authenticate the customer that they have access to that account is huge. Mm. That's phenomenal. You've almost eliminated fraud in that case, because if that customer or fraudster rather has access to somebody's bank account, let's be honest, they got bigger problems probably than, you know, trying to buy something that we're helping protect. That is going to, you know, eliminate the vast majority of fraud. And I think the other really nice thing is with Plaid's solution with adding here, we're also able to really validate, like, how long has that account been around for? Do we have confidence that the customer can pay their bill? So you not only eliminate fraud for the vast majority, but you also can significantly reduce, if not eliminate, even insufficient funds. So yeah, we see this as a really nice opportunity to help squeeze out and get rid of a lot of the fraud in the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that the UPI rails and the success they've had in India, part of this is also because they've also created new identity infrastructure with the Aadhaar card. So we've seen significant advantages there in China with facial recognition. I know there's social implications for that in the West, but you know, they have much, much lower fraud because of biometric identification systems on those payments rails. So if you look at Alipay, for example, it's like 60.0006 basis points of fraud. So 64 cents of fraud for every 10 million in transactions. Whereas for card not present in the US, it's like 11,200. So 10,000 times higher effectively. So bank pay does give you, you know, from a KYC and identity perspective, some advantages because you can lock it into, you know, mobile banking apps and stuff like that and, you know, the secure infrastructure. But anyway, let's have a quick break. What I want to talk about when we come back from the break, tell us a bit more about the partnership, and then let's do a bit of future gazing. Let's see what's going to happen over the next few years as we start using more AI and payments and things like that. I'd love to sort of riff with you guys on where that's going to go. Sound okay?
Sounds great.
That's great.
Great. All right, so let's take a quick break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We are talking pay by bank with Plaid and Adyen, Eric Saga, who is the Chief Operating Officer for Plaid, and Trevor Nice, who is the Global Head of Digital at Adyen. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Breaking Banks.
This show is brought to you by Alloy Labs. As much as we love talking on the show, we believe that action is more valuable than talk. Alloy Labs is the industry leader in helping fearless bankers drive exponential growth through collaboration, exclusive partnerships, and powerful network effects that give them an unfair advantage. Learn more at alloylabs.com. Alloy Labs, banking unbound.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King, and we have in the studio, virtually, of course, the team from Plaid and Adyen. We have Eric Saga, who's the Chief Operating Officer, and Trevor Nice, who's Global Head of Digital for Adyen. Where are you guys both coming to us from? Where are you connecting from today, Trevor?
Yeah, I'm actually based in Seattle. I live in Seattle, but office technically I would say is San Francisco, but on the West Coast.
Okay, good. Eric?
I'm dialing in from San Diego, so I've come a long way from where I grew up in Germany in terms of weather quality.
Yeah. Where in Germany are you from?
Frankfurt.
Okay. So well known. You know, a lot of us listening to the show have, of course, been through Frankfurt, wonderful town. Great. So so you guys obviously have experience in the US market. So one of the things we've noticed in terms of, and I want to talk about the partnership in a second, but just before we get on that, just to sort of tie in a knot neatly the discussion we're having on demographics, one of the things we see, you know, certainly in Europe, but certainly in Asia, also in Africa, we're seeing in terms of wallet adoption and this flows into the pay by bank, you know, but also sort of the value store process, is we see very strong adoption for, you know, the Gen Zs and the Alphas. Like we're talking about 80% adoption rates. But in the US, those rates tend to be somewhat lower. So about half of that. Now we can assume that the younger demographics are going to use wallets more. But how much of that is sort of like POS dependent or culture and network effect dependent in the US versus what we've seen happening in the US, Trevor?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is culture, frankly. I mean, I think we talked briefly about some of the incentives, right, for cards in general. And no doubt I fit the demographic of the older generation who loves my miles, loves my points. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, you can change behavior, though. That's the great thing about Americans. You can kind of buy them to do anything you want, right, in all reality. So you provide incentives, you can change behavior, you can change the culture. And I think, as we've seen in the U.S., it takes time to change culture and change behaviors, whether it's payments or anything, frankly, for that matter. And, you know, I think you need something to happen to help shift that. And, you know, not to keep reiterating the pandemic, but I do think that was just an amazing thing that happened from the payments world to really expedite digital transformation and to really drive people to wallets, to touchless, you know, tap and pay, to try different pay methods for, you know, buying and having something delivered to your door for groceries, as an example, right? Like there's so many just new scenarios that came up that required a different type of payment type that really opened the doors for wallets specifically, but is also opening the doors for other new payment type behaviors as well, such as pay by bank. So I think it is a cultural thing. It takes time. I think you need some events to help expedite those. And I think, you know, it's the one time I say we're fortunate we had a pandemic, but I think we were, frankly, in the payment space.
I mean, you do have that behavior in the States, like, can you Cash App it to me or can you Venmo it to me?
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact is there is sort of a little, yeah, there's a social network element to that. And what we have seen with Pix Pay and UPI in particular is you do see families sort of like, you know, the parents sending their kids, you know, money and, you know, in China, the red packets, you know, and people sending gifts with the red packets, that creating network effect. So it's sort of like the fragmentation of the free market model in the US versus these sort of combined models, which tend to be pushed by all the banks, tends to, I think, create more rapid network effect. But that's just my theory. Yeah, so
I really like that point, though, right? Because you're absolutely right. If I, you know, buy something from a friend or, you know, want to split a meal with somebody, it's like, oh, what do you have? Oh, you have Cash App. Okay, everybody better get Cash App, right? Or Venmo or whatever it might be. And so your circle of friends continues to expand to their circle of friends. And next thing you know, you're 100% right. Like that is how these things take off.
So tell us, Eric, maybe tell us about the partnership between Plaid and Adyen and why at this time and what does it mean for you guys?
I mean, we're very excited about it. One of the things that we noticed, you know, as I said earlier, we had a lot of customers that have always come to us to try to implement pay by bank cases via Plaid for, you know, account funding and basic bill pay use cases, et cetera. But over the last probably 12 to 18 months, what we noticed was more and more merchants coming to us that you would traditionally think of like, you know, e-com merchants, other kind of retail-oriented players, who they're not going to just do only pay by bank. I mean, you can actually do an account funding use case. You could do a bill pay use case where it's only pay by bank. That's the only option, right? You can pay with a check or you can pay with your bank account. That's it. Like they don't, like a lot of those players wouldn't accept credit cards, et cetera, before. But what's now actually happened is a lot of, you know, merchants that up until now hadn't been using pay by bank started approaching us, started asking about pay by bank. But in order to make pay by bank a success, you know, as Trevor hinted at before, it's not just making pay by bank standalone better. It's also about how do you integrate pay by bank into the suite of payment options that are available to the merchant and the consumer. And that is not something that we ever were going to go build on our own. And so, you know, I think Adyen obviously is world class when it comes to building payment solutions for their merchant base. We had a lot of merchants specifically ask us about Adyen and whether we would consider working together. And then those two things combined really kind of led us to have the conversation. And here we are. And we're very excited to be working on solutions together, like that will benefit both consumers and merchants alike.
Excellent. How much is this a sort of melding of the tech stacks, or is it more like protocols, or operationally, how is this partnership coming together?
I think to start with, it's as Trevor said, it's another payment option. I think that Adyen is kind of integrating into their set of solutions. It's also though how we go to market together, how we think through incentives, how we engage kind of merchants and everything else. And so all those things combined, I think, is where the opportunity is at. Again, from a merchant's perspective, it's really valuable to have pay by bank as part of your option set. It helps you bring down costs. It can be, 40% plus cheaper than some of the other options. And that ultimately has an impact then on your blended payments costs, right? And so if you reduce your cost by 40% on 1%, that maybe is not that big of a deal. But if you start reducing your cost by 40% on 10% and then 15% and then 20% and then 30% of your volume, it suddenly becomes a very big deal. And then it has the added benefits of stickiness that Trevor highlighted as well. If you have a subscription-based business and you have your consumers on a bank account, much less likely that they fall off when inevitably they change out their credit card or their debit card or whatever it might be. And then from the consumer side, you have all the benefits that we touched on earlier, right? Lots of consumers want to do that because, again, their services are uninterrupted. They don't have to constantly update it. It allows them to manage their finances more effectively, and ultimately the lower costs associated with it will benefit them as well.
It seems like that seems like an interesting opportunity as their cards expire, having them adopt these alternative methods. And, you could see a time when we just don't issue plastic cards anymore. I joke about this when I do my talking head stuff on the road. And I ask, banks in the audience, how many of you are still issuing plastic cards to your customers, right? And the hands will go up. And I'm like, 1970s tech in a 21st century world. Like, wallets are clearly the future. So, Trevor, when we talk about this sort of ecosystem of payments, we've often talked about on this show the cost of implementing FedNow for banks, $1 million, $2 million. We're hearing sort of price tags around that price point. But, we don't talk about the merchant cost of adopting a pay by bank. So is that, specifically what you guys have been working on, lowering the cost of adoption of bank pay as sort of part of the option set?
Yeah, it's exactly right. And that is the beautiful thing about the Plaid Adyen solution we're building here is for us at Adyen, it's just about as easy as check a box. And this implementation will be almost seamless to the merchant at the end of the day, right? Plaid and Adyen did all the heavy lifting, managing the UX, managing all the reporting reconciliation, all that comes through that same integration the merchant already has with Adyen. And the same integration provides everything back to them in their back office exactly the way that they need and expect, just like a card. So we've really done, I think, a nice job on really minimizing what that integration looks like. Now, the one thing, I would caveat there is if incentives are going to be provided, then there's going to be a little work there, right? The merchant would need to figure out how to accomplish in partnership with us. But other than that, yeah, we found a really nice way to greatly simplify that. And that's one of the big benefits that we offer.
Are you talking merchant incentives or customer incentives?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for clarifying. No, the end user. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, back to the point, I'll use me as an example. I'll probably keep using my miles card, but if you give me an incentive, happy to switch, and it comes down to as long as the consumer sees value, and that value may differ. The younger generation, the value may be, hey, it's a debit, it's a bank instrument. And that experience that Plaid Adyen have created is so frictionless. It's as good as a card in essence from a low friction perspective, that's enough. But for somebody who has a credit card, a premium card, it might take a little more incentive, right, to convince them that.
Yeah. I mean, I do think part of this is sort of just a generational shift, honestly. But at the same time, on the embedded banking, the embedded payments arena, we have seen, buy now, pay later, which is sort of the best example we have of contextualized credit right now. But there's opportunities for contextual credit, contextual bill management, contextual savings, and all of that sort of comes with this sort of real-time approach. It's not just real-time payments. It's real-time access to credit. It's streamlined KYC, so you can do stuff in the moment. And obviously, you know, Plaid's architecture is a key element of that, Eric. But let's talk about how do we make it easier for consumers to use and not, get over this thing with, previously when we've ever talked about bank-to-bank payments, you've got to have a sort code or a SWIFT code or these sort of complexities, which, it's easier just to put a card number and expiry date in. But how are we attacking sort of the consumer experience when it comes to pay by bank?
Yeah, and I'm happy to chime in here. I think the way we've approached that is it's as simple as logging into your bank. That's it. And it turns out more Americans know their bank account login credentials than their credit card, right? And so it's actually even simpler. Like you no longer have to, in the US back in the day, you'd find your paper check, you get your routing number, you get your checking account number, you actually typed it in correctly and you didn't actually, hit somebody else's account in essence. Or
how many times I've Google searched my routing number for my bank, I can't tell you, right?
Exactly. Or the micro deposits, right? I haven't seen that in a little while, which is good, but you wait 2 or 3 days, pennies drop in or three, and some banks, it's just a mess, right? And so, and this is where Plaid just brings so much power here to make this experience easy and frictionless. But that's it. Log into your account, you're done.
Yeah. Eric?
I mean, you almost forget how painful it used to be. It's not that long ago that it was just an incredibly painful process to do all of this. And I think, these days it's much easier for consumers to kind of go through that flow. It's also increasingly something that consumers have experienced, And so once you experience it once or twice, suddenly you realize there's a better way of doing this. And then the third, fourth, fifth time, it's much more likely that you'll do it again. And that is something that we've seen too. So we see, consumers that are returning kind of Plaid consumers and that have used Plaid before, we see those folks adopt and then convert at much higher rates as well. Mm. That's, again, this network effect really at play, where the fact that somebody's kind of seen it before, it's used it successfully, really enjoyed the experience from a consumer perspective, now they see it pop up in a different context, right? Maybe to go make a payment at an e-commerce checkout. Suddenly they're more likely to choose that as an option, and they're more likely to go through, which is then what drives all the value that's being created here for both the merchant and the consumer.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where it's sort of getting like now Facebook login, right? With where you're just verifying, is this a browser you want to use, or is this a merchant you want to use for bank, pay by bank? But, one of the things that has occurred to me just as we're talking, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is, if you were to ask the average Brazilian what Pix Pay was, they'd probably be able to tell you, right? If you were to ask the average Indian what the UPI rails were, they'd probably be able to tell you. But if you ask the average American what FedNow was, so do we need like specific branding, around this sort of bank pay capability to make it more consumer accessible, do you think? What do you guys think?
I mean, I actually think it's going to take time, and you're spot on with your observation, right? Like if I talk to my friends, my circle of friends, I guarantee they don't know what FedNow is, right?
Right.
And I think, what's going to happen is it's going to take time, and the network effect that we've been talking about almost this whole time now is real, meaning that once you try it, you talk to your friend, hey, have you tried this thing? This is pretty amazing. And they're like, well, let me go try it. And here you go. And all it's going to take is a couple really large merchants that exist out there to really accept it, get customers to try it. And I think it'll blow up. I think it'll really become mass adopted at some point. But you're right. For now, it's very nascent. And Americans aren't familiar with what it is. They haven't really seen it or felt it or used it. FedNow in itself is still so much in its infancy. Like, you can do payouts in FedNow, but you still can't collect payments on it yet.
Yeah.
There's RTP. The conglomerate by several issuers in the U.S. that are now been accepting pay-ins a little bit, still nascent, but it's going to take time. I also think that's where we're also excited to see the solution we're building is going to be also agnostic, like ACH rails runs on for some period of time, but we'll also be able to pull in the FedNow and RTP and make that a seamless banking experience, but just so happens that FedNow will be, you know, real time and be more of a push payment versus, you know, the ACH rails, which is beautiful for subscriptions, which is more of a pull payment method, but also is a, you know, a day or two for settlement.
What does this look like in 3 to 5 years? You know, Trevor?
Yeah, I think Brett, when the three of us sit down again 3 to 5 years from now and talk about this and say, hey, we're right on what we're expecting, I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised. I think we're going to see a bit of a slow roll for a little bit here, and then I think it's going to take off. I think this network effect will be real. I think it's we're going to see a lot of these solutions that exist in the marketplace. We're going to see, you know, we are today see a tremendous amount of demand from the merchants. We see that there is willingness, especially from that younger generation, to want to use and adapt and move to banking methods. We already see globally where this is headed. The Americans tend to follow, you know, the other markets around the world. So, I mean, I'm incredibly bullish and confident.
What was it that Winston Churchill said, that Americans can absolutely be depended upon to do the right thing after they've exhausted all other options? And that's the same with this sort of real-time payment stuff. But now, let's talk about artificial intelligence in the mix, because, you know, we haven't really got into that a little bit, but it occurs to me that AI-based automation of payments, so particularly for merchants and e-commerce platforms and so forth, more and more automation coming in this. As a merchant, you having some of the supply chain automated. As a consumer, me having my personal AI that's managing my bills for me and only telling me when it needs my intervention in things. I mean, we could see these things happening over the next 5 to 7 years, potentially, right? So do you think, is bank pay the key to success of there, or is it just is Adyen and Plaid going to be building more intelligent bridges, more intelligent traffic cop capabilities, so that the AI will choose the right payment at the right time? How do you guys see that developing? Maybe Eric, you start, and then Trevor, you can jump in on the merchant side.
I think there's many ways that over time, right, like AI can benefit consumers and merchants. It's not just going to be limited to payments. It's even things like an AI that gives you, Brett, advice on should you be taking out a new type of loan to pay off a higher interest loan? Should you be doing that today or tomorrow? Like all those types of things, right? And so,
can I afford to go out with my friends for my birthday party tonight?
Yeah, exactly. But then how should you pay? And then not just how should you pay for it, but you're going to have a big party tonight. You deserve it. And so how ultimately over time do you do that in a way that's good for you from a financial perspective as well? And so I think one of the things that I've always been really excited about is like the potential of the infrastructure that we're building and coupling that with AI to just give people the tools that today really only the very wealthy have. Right. If you're really rich today, you have a whole army of accountants and financial advisors and everybody else that does this stuff for you. But there comes a world where, hey, anybody can have access to these types of tools, right? And can get the right advice to live like a better financial life at the end of the day for themselves, their family, et cetera. I think the key to all of that, and it goes back to the question you just asked a little bit earlier around brand, I think it's deeper than brand. At the end of the day, this comes back to consumer trust, right? Mm-hmm. Like me sharing my username or like my password for my bank account is a scary experience, right? And so I have to go through it a couple of times to really kind of trust that the system is there to protect me. And I think we all have a role to play in that. Plaid, Adyen, but also kind of the regulators and policymakers, the FedNow folks, everybody else. Like if you really want it to take off and create the value that it can for people, like the trust component is the most crucial piece of that. And I think that's the methods that have gotten that right, even internationally speaking, they've built that on a foundation of trust with the consumer. And once you have that, then you can kind of add more and more features that, again, improve consumers' financial life, improve their choice, et cetera. But the trust piece is really the foundation for it.
Trevor, I mean, you deal with some of the biggest merchants on the planet. How are they thinking about AI in terms of their platforms when it comes to this stuff?
Yeah, I think for them, it's about providing or steering the customer to the right payment method that makes the most sense for them. So, for example, if somebody's going to sign up for a subscription, what is going to have the lowest churn, make sure that that's, you know, bank account or payment method, whatever it might be, just works every time. If it's going to be a large purchase, a single large purchase, it might be a different payment method that should be the one that is actually presented or provided to that particular customer. So I think it's two things. I think one is just providing the right payment type at the right time. And the second thing is removing friction and finding a way to just make it easy where it just works. I mean, you know, I love going back to the Uber example. Like, they've mastered this, right? Like, I walk in my ride, I walk out, and I don't have to pull out my payment type. You know, how do merchants do that? They've of course been doing card on file and things of that same nature to some degree, but how do they continue to leverage AI, automation, ML, et cetera, just to make that just the best easy experience possible for their customers? I think that's the two opportunities for sure with AI.
And this is why it's got to get easier. It's got to get frictionless. And pay by bank is one of those things that, from an architecture perspective, allows you to do a lot of that simplicity of the experience and streamlining those payments. So it's great to have you guys both on the show. Trevor, obviously people can go to rdn.com, but, you know, where can, you know, if I'm a merchant interested in looking at these services, where would I go to find that out? And how can I find out more, you know, how can I follow what you're doing in the space?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, adding.com is a great spot. If you're an existing customer, reach out to your account manager, of course. We're at all the large conferences that you would expect. If you want to reach out to me, please hit me up at LinkedIn. But yeah, love to hear from everybody.
Great. And Eric, same for you. Obviously, plaid.com is sort of a household name these days. You guys have done very well. But how can people find out about this partnership in particular and more information about what Plaid's working on right now?
I mean, very similar to Trevor. And of course, like, anybody can reach out to either Adyen or Plaid to kind of learn more about the partnership, and we'll make sure they get to the right folks.
Okay, great. And just finally, you know, what are you guys excited about for the rest of the year when it comes to Adyen and Plaid individually? So Trevor, what are you excited about this year?
Yeah, I think individually for us, I mean, this is one of the things I'm most excited about, frankly, this project that we have with Plaid. You know, we're in the process of releasing it right now. So we're early stages of it, but excited to see where we get this by the end of the year, excited to see the adoption and the excitement that exists in the ecosystem.
Fantastic. This is
very much, for me, one of the most exciting things we're working on.
Good. And Eric?
I was excited to come to your birthday tonight, but if it's Adyen and Plaid specific,
yeah. I don't know if you can make it. I'm in Bangkok, so
that might be difficult. I'm just excited to see, you know, some of the large merchants that we both have already, that, like, really kind of bringing these use cases to life and see great value for them and their consumers. Like, that's, and I think we're kind of like at that inflection point. And I think, like, as we go throughout the year, we're going to continue to see those pop up, and that will drive this whole thing forward for everybody.
Fantastic. Trevor Nies, Eric Saga, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks this week, and have a great week. What's left of it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
For having us.
That's it for Breaking Banks. Thanks for joining us. We will be back next week with more breaking news and industry news in the fintech and banking space. But for now, we'll see you next week. And make sure you give us a shout out on social media or give us a review on one of the podcast platforms. It all helps. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. That's it for another week of the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show, Breaking Banks. This episode was produced by our US-based production team, including producer Elizabeth Severance, audio engineer Kevin Hersham, with social media support from Carlo Navarra and Sylvie Johnson. If you like this episode, don't forget to tweet it out or post it on your favorite social media, or leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever it is that you listen to our show. Those actions help other people find our podcast, and in return, that helps us build an audience that can be supported by sponsorship so we can continue to provide you with our award-winning content every week. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you on Breaking Banks next week.